Welcome to Don't Wait Till Pigs Fly, a podcast for and about women with chronic illness, autoimmune diseases and invisible disabilities. Here we share resources, accountability, knowledge and caring for each other in a way that brings hope to those who have felt a lack of value and worth due to the stigma and gaslighting around their illnesses.
Hey everyone, welcome. I'm Nancy, the founder and president of Invisible Warriors. One out of every two adult lives, at least in the United States, lives with one chronic illness, often called invisible disabilities. The disability community is the largest minority in the world, and we're actually bringing in today the UK as part of our discussion. It's not just America. And the problem is that instead of feeling inclusive and wrapped in camaraderie, most of us feel alone, unvalued, and unworthy. We need doctors who understand us and colleagues and family members who believe us when we tell them something about our health. Just knowing the simple fact that we are not alone and still have much to offer can be life-changing. In this podcast, we share tips and strategies, knowledge and support. In other words, hope for those who are looking for resources to help them maintain a thriving, successful life. Do you have a chronic illness? Well, here at Don't Wait Till Pigs Fly, we have conversations that share the tools and mindsets others use to make our lives better. It's always good to know that there are others out there that have dealt with similar challenges, and our guest today is going to share with us their history and what they've learned along the way. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you, Nancy.
Laura, I'm going to let you pronounce your own last name because I know I'd mess it up today.
Nancy, my mom still can't pronounce it. It's my married name. It's a horrible German-derived Dutchified mess. It's Hermeshuis.
Say that again.
Hermeshuis.
Okay, I'm glad I didn't try to pronounce
it. You know what? Everybody just calls me Laura G. That'll do fine.
There we go. We'll do that. And welcome, Laura. I am so glad we were between the two of us. We had some issues and we had to postpone a couple of times this conversation, but we've made it. We're here and I am so glad.
So am I. I'm really happy to be here. I think if anybody understands, it's you and me, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we deal with it every day of our lives, sometimes more so than others, and we understand. But Laura, tell us a little bit about who you are and what brings you here today.
So who I am is actually something I've been dealing with for a while now, because who you are changes when you're diagnosed with the chronic illness, right? So who I thought I was somebody who was very driven, somebody who always pushed harder. You know, when I was growing up, I had all these things that seemed normal to me, but that weren't great. You know, like when you don't realize things are not as they should be because they just are how they've always been. For example, you don't realize that you're seeing things in a blurry way until you put on glasses. It just is what it looks like. So there were a lot of those things. And I was diagnosed with lots of discrete little things like, oh, she has growing pains. I don't know what that even means. Or she has a spastic colon and little things. And I also didn't want to be overly dramatic. So I just kind of pushed through and tried to stay fit and studied. And then in my early 20s, my body decided, okay, you're not getting the message. I'm going to make a point now. And eventually I ended up at neurology and I was diagnosed with myotonic dystrophy. And my body wanted to make sure I got the point. So I couldn't get out of bed for a few months and so on. I tried a tried and tested strategy that had worked for me up until then, which was ignoring it. Didn't work, unsurprisingly. I tried that strategy a few times. It never worked. Because And I started feeling like my body wasn't a part of me, but kind of more like an enemy, an adversary. Like I had to negotiate with it. Like, okay, I'll rest today, but then I'm going to need to do that tomorrow. And I felt very disconnected from my body, which is a weird way. It's a weird way to feel. And it also, that's why I saw myself a certain way, but my body wasn't allowing me to be who I wanted to be. So that's why when you say who you are, it's a difficult question to answer. It's been, well, 17 years now, so I've kind of gotten used to it. My body and I have made a truce, but it still doesn't really feel like perfect. And then I got COVID, and that was another setback. So after that, it triggered common variable immune deficiency syndrome. So for the past few years, I've also been sick literally all the time. So there's a pre and post diagnosis, and then there's another pre and post COVID. So it's changed who I am again, which is, I thought, I'd kind of made peace, but now here we are again. And now I no longer feel like I'm fighting against my body. I kind of feel bad for it now, like it's doing the best it can, but it's really not got what it needs. Yeah, so that's what brought me here. But I also realized quite recently that the way I am now, I mean, I'm looking into treatments and all of that, but the way I'm now, formal employment is not going to happen. I mean, I was formally employed and then I got retrenched and I just, but towards the end, I was falling asleep in meetings. I just couldn't sustain it anymore. So I started Disability Works. And my role now is to advise on accessibility, advise on accommodation policies, because even though there aren't enough accommodations in the world for me right now to stay in formal employment, I know that I have experienced the best and the worst of accommodations policies and how they can be handled. And also then I like to just be there for people who are transitioning, who are trying to adjust because, there's in the community we say people, some people are not disabled yet, because most people will have some sort of disability later in life because we're living longer but not necessarily healthier. So there are people, it's really hard to adjust. It's hard to give up a part of who you are. If something you do, you feel defines who you are and you can't necessarily do that anymore. There is usually another way to see it, another way to do it, another way to approach it, but it's really hard to see the wood for the trees. So that's what I
I'm going
like
to
to do.
stop you there for a second because I got a couple of thoughts and a couple of questions. It's really interesting that you started out this conversation the way you did, because I just finished writing a blog article before we jumped on this call. And it was about the fact that I had had this perspective change that was drastic over the weekend. My accident was almost 10 years ago, and I've just continued to push through and push through and push through. And all of a sudden, this weekend, we were at a big fancy dress ball, and everybody was out on the dance floor dancing. And I'm sitting here in my 600-pound wheelchair going, I can't do that anymore. I can't get out there and dance. I can't be the person that I used to be. And that was a real eye-opener for me because I had never realized that in all of this time. I've always just kept on going and thought, oh, that's just something, beside me. That's not a part of me. And now it's like, holy cow, there's a big difference. I need to really think about who I am now going forward, which I never have before. So it's really interesting that you were talking about that, first of all, because I think it's something that we don't necessarily do when we get sick. And we need to realize that we're not the same person. We can't do things the same way, but that doesn't mean we're any less valuable.
Yes. Yes. And we, it's not just, I know this is going to sound like a cliche, but there are, in fact, things I've gained. there are, as not just perspectives and insights, but skills and things that I've managed to. I've also, found value in things that seemed inconsequential before, especially because I've had to prioritize activities. If you talk about spoon theory, and I've seen the value in something that seemed just, by the way, something as simple as going for a walk. It's not something that is negligible anymore. And it's just so much more valuable to me now. If I'm having a good day, because my disability is not only like this is invisible, it's also fluctuates wildly. So from barely conscious on the one end to hip hop dancing on the other, So if I'm having a day where I can go for a walk, I really, really appreciate that. And I can see it's helped me to be more, to live in the present, which is what they say we should do, right? So, and to I have a goal as well. I set small goals for myself. My goal now is to I want to dance at my nephew's wedding. He's only three though, so it's quite a long-term goal. But
You've got time to work on it.
But that the problem is that it's a degenerative condition, so we'll see how that goes.
You can always, and I think it's good to have goals, and I think it's good to have a goal that's just a little bit outside the range of what we think we can do.
It's a stretch goal, it's a dream.
Yeah, because that can keep us going in many ways. The other thing that I wanted to ask you about that what popped into my head when you were talking is I read a lot about and I hear a lot about accommodations in the workforce. For and something you had said was because of the disabilities that you have, you cannot go out to work any longer. I think most times the people who work in the accommodation world are dealing with visible disabilities. And if there were someone that still really, really wanted to work out, or either if they were working from home or working outside of home, people don't consider those kinds of accommodations even as much as they do accommodations for someone in a wheelchair. I'm taking a certification program right now, and all they want to know is, well, do I know how many inches there are from the top of the bathroom sink to the top of my wheelchair? And I'm going, yeah, well, no, because that's not important to me. How do you, as someone who works in the accommodation field, how do you bring in accommodations for these disabilities that we have that are considered invisible?
So for me, I think that what I think the most important thing to do is actually the first step is to put in a policy in place. And in that policy, you set out these kinds of things. So you say, these are the kinds of things that we will consider. And you need to then just like, so I have what I call a priming conversation, where you bring in HR, you bring in maybe whoever, whatever management may be involved. And you say, okay, this is what we talk about. These are the kinds of accommodations you may need to consider. These are the reasons. This is why it works for you. This is why it's beneficial for you to do so. I mean, it's a no-brainer. You have somebody with great talent, great skills, and you just need to make it possible for them to bring as much value to your organization. It's not rocket science.
Are they willing to do that though with someone who looks perfectly
So
normal?
some are and some aren't. But I find that the companies who will do it for somebody who looks perfectly normal are the ones who will do it for somebody who doesn't. And the ones who are not going to do it for somebody who doesn't look fine are the ones who are going to do it for people who do look fine or don't. But like you do or you don't. I have had people say, but you look fine to me. And but generally with an employer, once I've explained it to them, they stay, they'll whether you look fine or not doesn't really make a difference. They're just, to be completely honest, either they're jerks and they don't care. I was going to say something that I probably shouldn't say, but they don't care. Or they want to do it, they want to do the right thing, they understand the value, they understand your value, they value you as a person and as an employee, and they will. It's there's actually not that much difference. So like I said, I've had an employer who basically did exactly the minimum that he had to do to make it as difficult for me as possible. So he did the minimum he had to do, but made it as difficult for me as possible to actually do what I needed to do so that I would leave. And there wasn't a thing I could do about it because he was within the letter of the law. And then I had another one who just didn't even ask me for any kind of anything, actually. They just said, "What do you need? We'll do it.
That's nice.
Whatever you need." And I said to them, this was when the immune deficiency became a serious problem. And I said to them, "Look, I need 4 day weeks." And they said, "Okay, we'll make it happen." And within 3 days, it was sorted out. They were incredible. So you've got both sides, you've got the extremes, you know? And then the fact of the matter is, if you've got an employer who won't do it, who's a joke, you've got recourse, but then you've got to keep working there. They're going to make it difficult for you in every way they can, in any case. I mean, the pay gap situation is the same. You've got recourse, but then you've got to keep trying and work there.
Yeah, and that I would think that would make it really, really uncomfortable.
Really, really uncomfortable.
So, so what do we do? Do people just say, I guess I'm just gonna give up and go stay at home? Or, how do you get around these things?
I wish I had an easy answer to that. I really do. I think that I do. That's why I'm pushing for accommodations policies, because then it's in your own damn policy, you know? Then you've
You're in
agreed
the
to it.
UK, correct?
I am not actually,
Oh,
no.
where are you?
I'm in Cape Town, South Africa.
Oh, okay. Well, that's very cool.
Yes.
I was going to say, it seems like everybody I talk to that's in the accommodation world is in the UK. I guess I just assumed that you were because, everybody I talk to is. But it's interesting to see how the policies for these types of things and how the understanding is different depending on the country that you're living in. I think the United States is way, way, way behind everybody else.
So we've got the law, but the organizational policies. I have yet to find an organization that actually just has an accommodations policy. So I'm not, yeah, that's why there's such a need for it, you know, and that's what I'm really trying to push for now. Yeah, although, to be honest, immunotherapy.
I know
Yeah.
it's rough, and I think that it's only one day at a time, one step at a time. I think what we need to do more than anything else is just let people know that they're not alone and there are those of us out there that are working and striving to the best of our ability to get them the help they need. But it also seems like most of us that are working in this field are working in it because we ourselves have difficulties. And you've got the government and the employers and all of these areas that don't understand. So that's a push, and you've got to be always forward motion trying to, you know, get acknowledgement. But then on the other hand, we get sick, we get tired. We're most of us dealing with, I can tell, being tired today, you know? And it's slow. And people are wanting change. If they're on the side of, I'm sick and I want these accommodations, I'm sick and I want people to understand that I've got these disabilities, we want it now. We want doctors that take care of us and hear us and all of that. But on the other hand, the people that don't have firsthand experience with these things don't necessarily understand what we're going through. And that makes it even that much harder to dig through the mud and try to move one step ahead.
Yes. And the people who, I mean, they care, and then, you know, like, and it's so hard when somebody comes from a place of care and they ask you, have you tried valerian root? Or,
yeah,
you know, and your sister's boyfriend's ex-mother-in-law is a doctor. Thank you. I've seen the foremost specialist in the country. I don't need to see a GP that you just know, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, people are well-meaning, but... And honestly, I want to shave off my hair, right? People keep telling me it won't suit me, don't do it. That's really not the point. I don't want to have to deal with washing it, like, and dry. Don't even get me started on blow drying. Thank you. So, but nobody gets it. They're like, it won't suit you. And that's really not the point.
Yeah. Now I put my head back on.
You get me, Nancy. You really, you know, I feel like when I'm talking to you, I feel like you just get it. I can just say half of what I mean and you'll get it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm right there with you. And it's like, I wouldn't even want to get up and take a shower this morning. And I
thought,
I got to.
Right. I've got to psych myself into getting up and taking a shower. Yeah. You know, and then there are these things that I just agree to just because I don't want to always be the like wet blankets. And then I know I shouldn't have, and then I ruin it anyway.
Well, and that's it. I felt bad because we've pushed off this conversation. Mm. And I really shouldn't have done it today because I'm not my energetic self. But, you know, you get tired of saying, I don't feel good, or, you know, let's reschedule. Right. Or, you know, so I get it.
So I'm sorry that I was the cause of that today, but the honest truth is I probably shouldn't be doing this today either.
Yeah, I mean, we're right in this together. And I will tell you, I will make concessions, and we're almost to our half hour anyway. So Let me just move it forward and say, what, if anything, in the next couple of minutes, do you want to tell the world?
I just want to tell the world, especially, I want to tell the world, just believe for somebody, right? It doesn't matter what you see. It doesn't matter what you've seen before. It doesn't matter what you're going to see in the future. Just believe somebody if they tell you they need something or they feel a certain way. Because you have no idea what they're feeling. You have no idea how much pain they might be hiding in right now. Also, if you want somebody to fake it, when you have chronic illness, if you don't fake it until you make it. You fake it until you break it. Don't ask somebody to do that. Don't ask somebody to do something that you know that they probably can't do, because they're going to try and fake it and it's going to break it. And if you have a chronic illness, if you have a disability, you're awesome. It doesn't diminish you at all. You're still an amazing, awesome, valuable human being. And there's always going to be somebody who sees how amazing you are. And that could be one of us.
Absolutely. I love it so much. Thank you so much, Laura, for being a part of this today. Deep breath. I'll let you go in just a second.
Thank you, Nancy.
You've really been wonderful today. And guys, I hope you listen to this. This was a heartfelt, vulnerable message today that you guys all need to take to heart and know that we're out there. We're there for you. We're going to be there to help you if we can. And just the world is an okay place to be. Guys, you all have been listening to Don't Wait Till Pigs Fly. If you haven't already, please give us a quick review and ratings on iTunes. And don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And to wrap things up, we are here on all of the podcast stations. And you can hear us and find us on invisiblewarriors.org. So until next time, stay out there, be productive, stay well, and know there's someone there to listen to you. Take care, everyone, and we'll talk soon. Bye-bye.
That's it for today, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. Today's podcast has been brought to you by the Invisible Warriors Club, a program of Invisible Warriors. They see how hard life is for these women and hate that the world doesn't seem to understand that these diseases/disabilities are serious, life-changing challenges which bring about poor medical treatment, high and unrealistic medical bills, lack of ability to sustain working conditions and loss of family cohesiveness. Through advocacy and programs, this organization extends a nurturing hand, fostering both awareness in the community and individual growth amidst adversities. Join them by heading over to the Invisible Warriors website for more information on how to join the club.